This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Day in the life after Eric Bledsoe is no longer a member of the Phoenix Suns. Day in the life. The Cardinals getting ready for a Thursday night battle, titanic battle, against the Seattle Seahawks. Day in the life of the Coyotes losing another game. Right. Welcome on in. We have a busy show today. Greg Hansen is going to be with us. I'm very much looking forward to this segment with Greg because there's so much going on around the University of Arizona, and none better than Arizona Daily Star longtime columnist, Greg Hansen. We're going to talk about Khalil Tate. At great lengths. I reached out to the U of A about having Khalil Tate on the show, and they said he was lifting, he's busy, whatever. So I'm going to talk to Greg about it. And Rich Rodriguez turning this thing around. Book Richardson, what happened with the scandal with U of A basketball on the court? Are they really that good, or is this just a bunch of the usual hype, and they are a Sweet 16, Elite 8, get eliminated? They're going to tell me how great they are, and then they lose, which is what's happened every single year with Sean Miller. Michael Fabiano is going to be with us, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. As always, we talk fantasy football with Michael Fabiano. Get your teams together. My team is all jacked up. I missed a waiver move. I'm not going to belabor this point. Guys, have you ever missed a waiver move and then your team is just screwed for the next several weeks? I missed a waiver 2 weeks ago. I got stuck having to play Keenan Allen on a bye and Willie Snead, who's terrible last week. My team's in first place. And we lost by four. I'm just a nightmare. Josh Braun is going to be with us. It is Talk to the Lopes every Wednesday. Talk to the Lopes, Grand Canyon University basketball. Senior guard, WAC preseason player of the year. He's a great story. I saw Josh Braun play at Boulder Creek, which is not a basketball powerhouse. They're pretty good. Then I saw him play at West Wind Prep when they were around because I needed to go see some prep school. This is when the prep school stuff was just starting out. And then, of course, he's done a great job over at GCU. They are home this weekend. Actually, they're home for most of this month. They play Florida A&M on Friday night. So we'll talk some GCU with Josh Braun and Casey Benson and all that. And then the Friday night 360 AZ preview show. Have you noticed, Eric, how studious and deliberate and intentional both Haley and Jordan are here on Wednesdays at work? Have you taken that
yes,
in?
Yes, I actually have.
They roll in early on Wednesdays, for whatever reason.
Well, they have a lot to cover. I mean, did you see Audibles this week? It was almost 9 minutes long.
Well, you're part of that, too.
A lot of games to get to.
Do you? You don't jump in on the show. I don't hear you jump in. You guessed it a couple of weeks ago.
I've been on once.
Yeah. What is that all about?
The traffic
I put you on every day.
I don't know. It's
their
show.
You have things to add.
They can do what they want. It's their show.
Do you know who they're having on today?
I don't.
All right. Well, we should find out. Maybe I'll put one of them on the air to promote.
I don't.
Show.
I just got the rundown, but I haven't printed it yet. So,
all right. So Haley and Jordan, because the high school football playoffs. Here's the great thing about this weekend: you can get the Cardinals game out of the way tomorrow night. Friday night, you can go to high school games, and Saturday you can take in both the ASU and U of A games. It sounds like Josh Rosen is going to play. I don't know if that's going to make a difference or not for UCLA, but I would rather see Josh Rosen play against ASU. And if you're an ASU fan, you want Arizona to beat Oregon State. Every year we end up doing this topic to a certain extent, and sometimes it just gets old, but I have to remind people of this. If you're one of those, I will never root for the Wildcats. I never root for the Sun Devils. I've lived here all my life. We cannot do that. Then you're just not dealing with the reality of what is in this day and age of college football. You want U of A and ASU to win the next couple of weeks, at least U of A this week. They're on a bye next week. And then you want to set up a game that actually matters when it's ASU U of A, because most years it doesn't. If you're a former player, yeah, it matters every year. If you're one of the, I don't know, five alums that every year, oh, we're 2-9, we're playing 2-9. How often does the U of A ASU game have significant national impact? Very seldom, if ever. And the only way that's going to change is if both programs get out of being mired in mediocrity, where I get people that are so excited. If we win one more game, we're bowl eligible. We get to go to El Paso again. No, take me back to Jake Plummer and his team, please, because they got it. They understood that stuff like El Paso doesn't cut it. Doesn't cut it. No, you want these two teams. Every year, I would want to see ASU and U of A ranked in the top 25. They don't have to be ranked in the top 10. I don't think that's realistic for either program. Neither program has shown the propensity to be a top 15 team in the country every year. If you think I'm being harsh, look at the numbers. I mean every year. You know, when you say we aspire to be great, okay, great is Alabama. Great is USC. Great is Ohio State, even though they got whacked this last week. There's very few great pro. Clemson is a great football program. There's a lot of brand names that are out there. Notre Dame has not been good. This year, Notre Dame's great. But every year, Notre Dame gets a lot of attention because it's a brand name. Oregon is not good this year. They're a brand name that I think their best days are way behind them now. They are. Washington, brand name that wasn't good for years. Okay? Wasn't good. Eric, do you see the fight between Brock Huard and Jim Mora, by the way?
I heard about the war of words, yes.
This is good.
Yeah, it's good.
This is good. We because Washington plays Stanford this week. And Friday night, I know you're going to a high school game, right?
I'm going to two. Out in the West Valley.
So Friday night, are you going to be wanting to know how Washington and Stanford are playing? How are you caught up in this college football weekend?
Yes, but not in Washington-Stanford on Friday. Washington against an unranked Stanford team doesn't really...
Bryce Love Heisman Trophy?
Yeah.
Washington, good defense?
Oh, yeah. But, all the games this weekend, that's towards the bottom of the marquee games, in my opinion.
If Washington wins, then they're still alive.
Yes, they are.
But they would need a lot of help, and having seen them in person, obviously their kicking game's horrible, but having seen them in person, they don't strike me as a top four team.
They need USC to run the table, and they need to beat USC badly in the Pac-12 championship game, if that's what it comes down to. And I personally don't think they're going to make it because their loss is not a good loss, and their non-conference schedule is one of the worst in the country. So that's two strikes against them.
But if they beat Stanford.
An unranked Stanford, yes.
And Stanford beats Notre Dame.
That will help.
Okay, so there's some games that are in play. Like if TCU loses to Oklahoma, is it the end of the world for TCU?
For the playoffs? Or for the Big 12 championship
game? Let's
go
Big 12 title game first.
It is not the end of the world.
See? If it's in the national title place.
The playoff. A two-loss Big 12 team, I don't think, is going to
make it. A two-loss team in general doesn't do it. But we're going to get to a point where that happens. Somewhere down the road, a two-loss team. Like this weekend, the magnitude of games, the dearth of great games, this is going to be a great Saturday. You know, I'm excited. The Cardinals game is tomorrow night. You know, it'll be fine. It's fun to be on national television. I am not a fan of Thursday night football. I am not. If you read on the site, Peter King was with us yesterday for our weekly visit. He's of the opinion that Thursday night football needs to disappear, that needs to go away. I think the only way that that would change is if you're coming off of a bye week, that's when you play a Thursday night game. I don't know why or how. I mean, I do know why or how. Players and the league office thought that, hey, let's turn right around. Like Adrian Peterson carried the ball 37 times on Sunday. Let's turn right around, and 4 days later, we'll put him right back out on the field. Like, that's the intrigue to me about tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, I know I'm all over the place in this opening segment, but it's I'm excited for sports this weekend. I'm not talking about kneeling or anthem protests. I do have to get into LiAngelo Ball a little bit. Unfortunately, today there's going to be a little bit of ball talk on the show. Okay. Greg Hansen comes up in about 15 minutes. On the other side, we're going to continue with this rant and some basketball, the Bledsoe, and what should happen with LiAngelo Ball and UCLA. And just this whole, if you didn't hear what transpired in the last 24 hours, it's just stunning to me. And all sorts of opinions about the Suns. all sorts of opinions. Yesterday, when the trade came down, most everyone hated it. Now, 24 hours later, there's people that are taking a big breath saying, well, maybe the Suns didn't do so badly on this. I will weigh in on that next. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. There's a really good story that just cleared on AZ Central that Nick Pecoro put together, who covers the Diamondbacks. And if you haven't seen it, I just retweeted it, put it on my timeline. He got to Scott Boras, the agent for J.D. Martinez. I think this is really worth discussing in this segment because you go through the quotes and it's, wow, okay, and this just posted at 10:04. J.D. Martinez, I'm going to read some of this, and I'm kind of processing it as I go through. J.D. Martinez, Scott Boras, the agent for J.D. Martinez, okay? And Scott Boras, if you're not familiar, is one of the toughest guys. There's no hometown discount. He always gets his man big dollars, and he gets them usually in big markets, but not always. Boras doesn't see a good reason for the Diamondbacks and owner Ken Kendrick not to pursue the slugging free agent outfielder. So the agent is putting this on the Diamondbacks today. Quote, why wouldn't he? Speaking of Kendrick, Boras asked. Quote, he's been a very competitive owner. A good owner in that way. In that way. The great thing is it's rare in free agency when you get a chance to see the player perform in your market and with your team. What a determined player. He's diligent. He's driven, no doubt. Boras is known for describing his clients in grandiose, often hyperbolic terms. This is according to Nick. More Boras. Quote, he's a superstar talent. He's done things that few players have done. The way Boras sees it, the Diamondbacks, in a way, already have committed themselves to spending on Martinez by signing right-hander Zach Greinke, who off seasons ago signed a six-year, $205 million deal. Quoting Scott Boras today, you don't sign Greinke and not sign this guy, Boras said. I mean, once you drop in the pool, you're in the water. Once you're in the water, it's kind of hard to say you're not wet. It sends a message to the fan base about being competitive, all the things we talk about as a player. Those are monumental decisions, I think appropriate decisions. The good news is everyone knows the investment. The talent is worthy, and the personality and the leadership also goes with it. And they have a chance to review it up close and personal. You have all the information you need to make an informed decision, that's for sure. So here's the agent that is totally turning it around and putting it on the Diamondbacks and saying, hey, you know, they're already in the water. That's awesome. I love it when agents go through the media to do their negotiating and just lay it out there and like, okay, we're going to put the pressure on the fan base here. We're going to say, what was the line? I'm going to go back up here. Talking about Ken Kendrick, he's been a very competitive owner, a good owner in that way. That's not what I would call the most ringing endorsement. Eric, are you reading through these quotes as I'm reading through them, or am I just wanting to read through them?
I'm listening. Yeah. They are interesting, and yes, it is funny how the agents frequently use the media to kind of make a splash when it comes to free agency and trades and things like that.
When he's talking about going in the water, you don't sign Greinke and not sign this guy. Remember, Greinke is 6 years, $206.5 million. And if we're being truthful with each other on this, has Greinke performed as a number one top of the line pitcher? You could say yes. You could make that argument if you're in the Greinke camp. I tend to look at it and say, I can't have an open checkbook. As much as fans would like to have an open checkbook, I don't believe that that is realistic. Scott Boras, in a sense here, is negotiating a number for his guy off of what Greinke's number is, which is $200 million.
Yeah, there's your price point right there.
They play different positions, by the way. Let me think here. What else did he say? Boras, talking about Justin Upton and Yoenis Cespedes getting his big contract last year, a four-year, $110 million deal. Do any of them hit 40-something home runs and hit 300, Boras said. You have to look at performance and say, where is the performer who is comparable? And you go from there. I don't believe any of those performers are in that place. So he's saying 4 years, $110 million, not going to cut it, not big enough. Okay, we're already then at $26 million a year.
Okay. That's a lot of money. Some teams' payrolls are like $50 million a year.
So he's already, that's what he's saying here, is what Cespedes got versus what JD is going to be getting or seeking to get is 4 years, $110 million. So, yeah, it's $26.2 million a year. Do any of them hit 40-something home runs and hit 300? He's quoting Scott Boros. Quote, it's a very rare place. It's a unique place. It's something that we normally don't get in the free agent market. I've represented a lot of 30-year-old free agents. Jason Wirth, Sin Shu Chu, Jacoby Ellsbury, Holiday, Beltran, all those guys that are at this level. They're really good players. None of them were in the 45 and 300 category. My comment on that would be, yeah, for one season. Okay. Throughout his career, Martinez officially became a free agent on Thursday. Mike Hazen wouldn't comment when asked if he's had conversations with Martinez, so on and so on and so forth. So the price points here, what can we take from the quotes of the agent? So last week, Justin Upton got a five-year, $106 million deal with the Angels. I would make the argument that J.D. Martinez is a better player than Justin Upton. And so that contract, you're at, $20.1 million per year. Then you go over to Cespedes, 4 years, $110 million. Okay, so now we're up to $26, $27 million. And Boros is saying, do any of them do what we've seen here out of J.D. Martinez? I don't believe any of those performers are in that place. So now the floor is around $27 million. Now you go over to Greinke. So Greinke, 6 years, $206 million. You don't sign Greinke and not this guy, Boros says. I mean, once you drop in the pool, you're in the water. Once you're in the water, it's kind of hard to say you're not wet. It sends a message to the fan base about being competitive, all the things we talk about as a player. So if the team doesn't step up, according to the agent now for J.D. Martinez, then this really isn't the place for him. The number then to me, if Greinke's at 33 and 27, he's already poo-pooing. There you go. It's around $30 million a year. So $30 million a year, let's say 5 years, $30 million a year, $150 million tied up in one guy, $200 million tied up, or less than $200 million now with Greinke.
And J.D. Martinez picked the perfect time to get as red hot as any player in the National or the American League the last two or three months of the season. Just he couldn't have played that any better because now the price tag is, as Boros has mentioned, is probably quite high.
Well, and add to that, Eric, he picked the right time to go get Scott Boros.
True.
I mean, you can't blame J.D. Martinez on this one. And I really can't blame the Diamondbacks because we have such a unique situation that is sitting here today. What you do with J.D. Martinez directly impacts what happens with Paul Goldschmidt. You know, Zach Greinke's almost off to the side here. You've got that number in place. And moving a pitcher, I don't think the fan base, this isn't a slap towards Zach Greinke. Pitchers can come and go unless their last names are Johnson and Schilling. Greinke is not that. He's been very good. But if you let Goldschmidt just sit here and stew, because the first person to talk to once the number comes out for J.D. Martinez, even the offer that is being made to J.D. Martinez, Paul Goldschmidt's people have to be looking at that saying, they offered him $30 million a year. Well, Paul sat here with a below par contract by Derek Hall's own admission. He's below market. This is going to get more than interesting now that Boros has thrown these quotes out. Really good stuff there from the agent. And the business side of this, you may not like the business side. I think the business side is fascinating because, guys, you think it's an endless just throw money around? You got this contract over here for Yasmani Tomas. It's a bad contract. You've got to get out from that contract. But how are you going to trade him? You know, it's a bag of rocks deal. Yasmani Tomas, bag of rocks, get him out of here. Yeah, well, we want Jake Lamb and Yasmani Tomas. We'll take him off your hands. Well, we're not going to do that. You got to figure out, you're going to have to give up some quality to get rid of a guy like Yasmani Tomas. Let's take a break here. I want some extra time with Greg Hansen. Greg is going to join us next. Arizona Daily Star columnist. There's a lot to chew on around the U of A. Really interesting show today. This Boros stuff just got me going. It's good work there by Nick. You can check it out on his timeline over on AZ Central as well. Sports360AZ.com. We're back after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Brad Sesmat with you. And again, tonight, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ. We cover pro, college, high school around the great state of Arizona. 16 airings a week. That will be on tonight, before and after. The Almighty Suns, yeesh, taking on the Miami Heat with Goran Dragic making a return. Dreadful. By the way, last segment, I'm getting a lot of people that are sending me notes about Scott Boros, the agent now for J.D. Martinez, and his quotes today. I'm going to write about this, I think, a little bit later today, maybe do something video-wise as well. As mentioned, I'm very interested in what's going on around our state on all platforms. We had Jerome Sowers on a couple of weeks ago up at NAU. Guy gets fired, then they get ranked in the top 15. It's been a terrific story. Been sending some tech stuff down to Rich Rod. Been wanting to talk about Khalil Tate. And obviously with what happened with Book Richardson, new AD, there's a ton going on around the University of Arizona, and there's none better to put a bow on all of it than Greg Hansen. And, of course, Greg, longtime columnist with the Arizona Daily Star, and he joins us for a couple of minutes. How have you been, Mr. Hansen?
Excellent. How about you, Brown? I see that you're really, really busy.
Yeah, I'm getting around. There's a little bit going on, stuff. So,
yeah.
Stuff. You've had stuff. Tell me about just the last 3 months of sports stuff. You've had what's gone on with basketball, with Book Richardson. You've had Khalil Tate emerge on the scene. You've had Rich Rod's future debated left ways, right ways. You've had a new AD come on board. Where do you want to start on all this, Greg?
Well, I'm so taken by Khalil Tate. I call him Khalil Tate. he changed everything. I don't know if he saved Rich Rod's job, but it was heading that way. And now for the next two seasons, Arizona would figure to be in the hunt for almost anything in the Pac-12, don't you think?
Well, you look at the Pac-12 South, and in just watching Khalil Tate, I'm one of the five people that have Pac-12 Network, so I've actually seen him a couple of times.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, you see someone that is that talented and that gifted, and the obvious question, what I get on the rubber chicken circuit up here is, why didn't Rich Rod start him from the beginning? And I'm just asking you, did you see this type of talent in him before it all burst on the scene?
Oh, no way. Of course, media people don't go to practice. So unlike in the 80s and 90s, you didn't have a clue.
Right.
But his numbers in Gardena, Sarah High School, were just unreal. You don't come across, Arizona doesn't get a guy like this from Los Angeles. So that's what stunned me. It was number one, they got him. And number two, that, as you just said, it took them so long to realize what they had. That's really not unusual, though, in college football.
Right. You got something on him that maybe we don't know outside of football on the field. What do you like about him as a kid, as a student?
He's soft-spoken. He realized that he wasn't working hard enough in practice. And he turned it up a notch, although he knew he had to wait for his opening. I mean, if you remember last year against ASU, Arizona quarterback Brandon Dawkins looked like Johnny Manziel or somebody.
Right, right.
I thought he was the guy. I think everybody did. And then suddenly he couldn't complete a pass when you had to complete one in the fourth quarter. And he wasn't working out. And we had this guy on the bench. Who knew?
You're a Heisman voter. I'm a Heisman voter. He's not going to win the Heisman. But,
nah.
But from an attention standpoint, for the U of A, we'd have to say Kadeem Carey and Khalil Tate. Is that it when we're talking Heisman candidates through the years?
Arizona has had one offensive player ever finish in the top 10, and that was Kadeem Carey. About 4 years ago, he finished 10th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arizona's never had the first-team All-Pac-12 quarterback. 1978 to now, never. Not a first-teamer. And so he probably won't get it this year because Sam Darnold looks like he'll win it. But, you know, maybe next year and the year after if he doesn't get hurt.
But you look at Sam Darnold, and he's in a big media market. Yeah, he's had bigger games. I think if Khalil weren't playing on a network that nobody gets outside of the five of us around the state, that he would have a much better resume, a much better resume.
I had never seen a quarterback ever play like he played in four games. Of course, he played against really suspect defenses, UCLA, Colorado, Cal. So, you know, he did that against four average or below average defenses. And then he played against USC, and he looked like a beginner in the first half. And then in the second half, he looked just like he did against Cal. But they've got really two really tough games remaining at Oregon and at ASU, and how he plays in those two games, how he produces, will depend on if this is a good season or not.
We're talking with Greg Hansen. So if you were to go over on the side of Rich Rodriguez, all of a sudden he's a smart coach, which I guess. I mean, I've felt good about Rich Rod from a distance. You may see it differently than I do about where the program is with him taking Khalil Tate out of the equation. Where do you see everything with him right now?
Well, I thought they were dead in the water. I don't think they were going to be able to pay him off and get rid of him, though. Mm-hmm. And now, obviously, as ironic as it seems, if Arizona can win, can split with Oregon and ASU, he'll probably be on the list of like Tennessee or Arkansas or somebody looking for a coach. He's got $2 million payments coming up on a retention bonus, and I don't know if he would leave now. And would he leave with Khalil Tate? And I mean, his entire defense are freshmen, so maybe they're just getting big numbers because somebody has to make the tackles on 80 plays a game. But it looks to me like they've got something going, and he's going to be hot again. I really thought it was over. I thought they didn't have one all-conference caliber player. And now maybe they have one. Khalil Tate.
Well, and you and I have talked through the years about Rich always looking at other job opportunities. I don't think that a good coach wouldn't at least look occasionally. Yeah. I have no problem with him looking occasionally, but it feels like there's always a door to try to get out of the situation that he's in. That's not a criticism of him. Is it a better job going to Tennessee than it is in Tucson? I mean, from a football standpoint, you would have to say, I believe, yes, it's a better job, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. You know, he tried to go to South Carolina 2 years ago and didn't get it. And came home and was very abrupt about it, very short, has never talked about it. Mm-hmm. I think he was stunned he didn't get it. And so here he is. He knew he had nothing coming, not much, for the next 2 years here. So he was trying to beat the posse out of town, and he didn't, and yet somehow it's turned around in the least amount of time possible.
Okay, but the enthusiasm around football, and this is something you and I have talked about through the years. I thought it was interesting. The new AD has come in, and it was disappointed with the attendance. It hasn't translated to people showing up and buying tickets, the Khalil Tate show, yet, or has it?
It has been disturbing at how little support in the grandstands Arizona has gotten. And I even noticed ASU had 44,000 last week. Mm-hmm. But Arizona drew 42,000 on their homecoming game against 15th-ranked Washington State on the heels of Khalil Tate's three games, where he emerged, 42,000.
Yeah.
I mean, during the Mike Stoops years when they were fairly average, they were drawing 55,000 5 years in a row. I mean, is it a generational thing where students don't go that much anymore, or where people just like to stay home and watch on TV, or is it the games are so long and start so late?
Right.
Probably a combination.
I agree on that. How's Hickey been versus Greg Byrne for you, from your view?
Man, he's a good guy. I'm beyond the first impressions, and he's just a good person. Mm-hmm. And it's in his blood. You know, he was number two in college. And then he went to Central Michigan, basically his home turf. and ran his own program, and then he came here. I thought he was the top guy in the market for somebody grabbing an AD, unless you were, you know, Ohio State or somebody.
Right.
And they got him, and you can tell right away. I mean, he's the real deal. He's going to be good, and I'll bet he's here until he retires.
Really?
And he's what you need. He's what you need.
Yeah. You think he's a lifer there, huh?
I do. I think he's, what, 53 or 4 or something? Mm-hmm. Well, unless, like, Michigan or somebody came after him, on, you know, from his home state.
Sure.
But he's a likable man, and he knows what he's doing. Within 4 months on the job, he announced a $66 million plan to rebuild Arizona Stadium and the softball stadium, which down here is a big deal.
Sure.
And, I mean, 4 months, and he got the money and got the approval, and it's going to start the day the season's over. So that's what they absolutely needed. Greg Byrne did a little bit of it and got – he actually spent $72 million to build the north end zone and the team's facility. But he left – that was just on the cusp of what needed to be done, and now – Kiki came in right away, and man, he's really been impressive.
We're talking with Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star columnist, all things around the University of Arizona, kind of getting a state of the union. Book Richardson, okay, fill me in your view of when this first started and what your reactions were to it. Not the universities. What were your thoughts on this, Greg?
I think Butch is a terrific human being. And the most well-liked guy in the basketball department. And I don't think he'll ever spend a day in jail. And I don't think, my opinion, I don't think he did anything wrong.
Really?
Except the little stuff that goes on everywhere. And, but his career has been wrecked. And that's really, really tragic. You know, he's living under house arrest. He can't leave his house. And I think he's having financial troubles. And I don't know if he can afford the caliber of attorney who can help him out. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to go to New York today for the indictments. He requested a stay, and he got one. And although he was indicted by a grand jury, I just think he's a good guy. I can't believe someone said, here's $15,000 to steer this guy to Adidas or to this irreputable street agent. I just can't believe he's that kind of guy.
It's interesting, you know, when you say that this happens everywhere, I tend to agree with you that the underbelly of college basketball, I don't tend to agree, I do agree. I mean, I see it. I'm back in club ball again with my son, and I see stuff. I see stuff going on for freshmen, sophomores, juniors in high school, and people are going to want, well, give me an example. I'm not going to give you an example. I just see it, and it's been out there forever. But to this point, he did get caught, right? And so the damage to the program is immeasurable or blip on the radar from your view? Which way is the damage done on the program?
Well, right now it's pretty significant. The reputation has just really took it right in the face. And I think the FBI is looking to take down, quote, the mob bosses like the Rippitinos. Mm-hmm. And if they have to use the Book Richardson to do it, that's what they're going to do. And I think in a way Book's being used. I mean, I have no proof. But you probably read the Josh Pastner stuff yesterday.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's friend turning him in.
I mean, that's giving the guy some $50 grocery credit cards, paying for a $200 plane ticket. You don't think that goes on all the time everywhere?
Right.
In the Power Five conferences.
How has Sean handled all of this inwardly? And would he even let you know? Can you even get a gauge around Sean because he's got such a wall around him?
You hit it. The wall around him is no one's got into it. The one thing that struck me is he called Book Richardson Emmanuel, his formal name. Mm. He never, ever used the name Emmanuel, ever. And that, to me, was a signal that he's distancing himself from Book. And I guess that's what you have to do. That's your strategy. And I don't know. I don't think anything big is going to come of this.
Really? All right.
I just don't think there's... I mean, what's Book guilty of? Is he, I talked to a judge here who said the only thing he's guilty of is tax evasion. If he did take that $15,000, but he hasn't had time to file his 2017 tax returns yet, so he's probably guilty of nothing.
It's good stuff there. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate catching up with you and all the time that you gave me this morning, Greg. Thanks.
All right, Brad. Good luck. Talk to you later.
See you soon. It's Greg Hansen, Arizona Daily Star columnist with us. Good to catch up with him. Lots of things happening. Michael Fabiano on the other side, then talk to the Lopes. I'm Brad Sismat. And now out to Los Angeles, it is time, our weekly segment with Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, the Hall of Famer. Always good to catch up with Michael. We've been talking back and forth here for 4+ years now. And Michael, as we're sitting here now in the early part of November, the trends this year are every week you and I go through injury after injury after injury. And I'm just curious, from your point of view, are we seeing a lot more big names go down this year? Thus, everything is in a state of flux in this year's fantasy season because there is no sure thing week in and week out.
I mean, I think there are a few sure things, but there have certainly been more big names who have gone down this season. In fact, you can put together literally a Pro Bowl roster,
yep,
reality or fantasy, of the players who have been injured. And you know, the Cardinals have suffered, you know, two with David Johnson, of course, and losing Carson Palmer as well. But it seems like every team has at least suffered one major injury this season, and it has had a huge effect on fantasy football. Another thing that's had a big effect on fantasy football is the decline of the wide receiver. You know, 2 years ago, everyone thought wide receiver was on the rise, and it was overtaking running back as the top position in fantasy. Well, if you look at the numbers right now, it has been one of the worst seasons statistically for that position. And then when you add in the fact that you lose a player like an Odell Beckham Jr., for example,
yep,
it just makes it even more difficult for fantasy owners to decipher who to start, who to sit at that position outside of the elite players.
If I had OBJ and Ezekiel Elliott were a sure thing with me, I'd be winning my league easily, okay? Now, Ezekiel Elliott's still been out on the field, but I don't know week to week. So I'm sitting there screwing around on the waiver wire, and I'm messing around with Willie Snead, who's giving me nothing. And every week, and I'm getting this long question or ramble is on to the questions about wide receiver. The mailbag is stuffed with individual names this week. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody that you're looking at on the waiver wire this week that makes a ton of sense? Is it Marvin Jones? Is it Ryan Anderson? Where are you going with wide receivers this week?
Well, if Jones is out there, definitely go out and grab him. Just keep in mind that last week's performance against Green Bay, it's been a trend with him the last 2 years. He has dominated at Lambeau Field, dominated. So I don't know that you can expect him to put up those kind of numbers week in and week out. Robbie Anderson, as you mentioned, is a great play this week against the Buccaneers. Robert Woods in L.A., he's been tremendous, and a player who has been valuable in PPR leagues. Mohamed Sanu, he's been maybe not as good as Julio Jones, but he's been good. And he's a player who's available on the waiver wire as well. There are several wideouts, and at this point, they're probably off the waiver wire if you're playing in a competitive league, but there are some guys out there, including the ones that I just mentioned, who can be added and help you right away.
Okay, getting a lot of questions about Ryan Fitzpatrick, your view on him. We saw him out here in Arizona, and he threw it for a boatload of yards. I'd say if you're looking for a quarterback, pick him up. Where are you at on Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I would actually go Josh McCown if I had to pick, because he's been averaging almost 20 points a game in his last four games, and believe it or not, he is basically even with Drew Brees in terms of total points for the season, which, geez, no one expected that,
right,
going into Week 10. But Fitzpatrick is interesting, and here's why. Number one, he's got a revenge game. Of course, he can have a revenge game against half the leagues because he's played for half the teams in the league. But this is a matchup where I wouldn't be surprised if both quarterbacks gave you right around 18 fantasy points. And another interesting aspect of this game, Josh McCown and Ryan Fitzpatrick have combined to play for 15 teams in the National Football League. That is the most in NFL history that two opposing quarterbacks have combined to play for. So this is a game that has a bunch of different angles. You can also look at it as Fitzpatrick and McCown both having revenge games. Austin Seferian Jenkins with a revenge game. Mike Evans is out, which means DeSean Jackson, Cameron Brate have some more value this week. But both of those quarterbacks are very sneaky plays.
Getting a lot of questions about the Eagles' backfield and the depth of it for Michael Fabiano from the mailbag. What do you make out of the Eagles' backfield?
Well, it sure looked good, but of course, things are always confusing in fantasy football. So,
yeah.
You know, you have LeGarrette Blount. They trade for Jay Ajayi, and then Corey Clement leads the team in touches and fantasy points last week. Only makes sense, right?
Right.
So I think down the line it will be Ajayi's job. And he's going to benefit from the fact that he's playing in an offense with a better offensive line with a hot quarterback under center in Carson Wentz. So he's, I don't know if he's going to be an RB1, but he'll be a high RB2. And if you look at the schedule, too, the schedule is pretty favorable down the stretch.
What does Michael think of the Bronco quarterback? Is there one worth having with their skill talent? Get a lot of questions about Broncos.
No, not right now. I mean, Paxton Lynch at some point might see some snaps, and what we saw from him in limited time as a rookie wasn't all that impressive. So he's got a lot to learn. We've already seen Simeon and Osweiler, and to be quite honest with you, the best value that those quarterbacks have right now is in that you play the defenses that they're facing.
That's right.
And that is the case this week with the Patriots. And it's unfortunate because that offense has really struggled, and it has really hurt the value of a guy like C.J. Anderson, who all of a sudden is in a three-headed monster in the backfield there. But there isn't a Broncos quarterback you can trust at this point. And it's been a long time since we've been able to say something like that. Simeon last season was he was a matchup-based option, but even this season, you can't even trust those guys at that level.
Let you go off that. Do your thing. Appreciate the time as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, pal. Take care.
There's Michael Fabiano right there from the NFL Network. He joins us every week. Always good to catch up with Michael Fabiano, all things fantasy football. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it is Talk to the Lopes. Looking forward to Talk to the Lopes this week with Josh Braun. And then we'll have our Friday night 360 AZ football preview show on the high school end. I know for sure that Haley and Jordan are going to go overtime on this today because there's so much going on the high school football platform. We had great response to that portion of what we do here. Every Wednesday, we preview the high school football playoff game. Sports360AZ.com. We're back after this timeout. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. We talk Grand Canyon University athletics every week all around the fruited plain of GCU's campus. Doesn't matter what sport it is, but this week with two home basketball games, we're going to focus in on the basketball program on the men's side, and Josh Braun is going to be with us. Josh Braun's a really interesting story. This is going to date me some, but I would see Josh Braun when he was at Boulder Creek play basketball when I was over at Channel 3, and then he went to Westwind Prep. And then he goes to GCU. And so here's this hometown kid that has made good. What I'm really curious about with Josh Braun is what's he going to be doing a year from now? Because Josh Braun has done just about everything he can do at GCU other than go to the NCAA tournament or a WAC tournament. He's going to be able to accomplish both those this year. The senior guard joins us for a couple of minutes. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. Heck yeah. Why not? What are you going to be doing a year from now, Josh? A year from now, where's Josh Braun?
Well, you know, I don't know. That's kind of the crazy thing. I'm looking forward to this year. As you said, you know, we have an opportunity to go to the WAC tournament and the NCAA tournament. So definitely hoping to do that. But as far as next year goes, man, I'm hoping to continue to play. I don't know where that'll be. Don't know how that'll look just yet. Just hoping to, you know, have the best year that I can and help this team the best that I can. And hopefully we can accomplish all that we've kind of set out to accomplish. And then, we'll see where I end up after this. I hope I have a few opportunities when that time comes. But you'll have to stay tuned.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering because you're picked as the WAC preseason player of the year. That's pretty heady stuff. Let's start with that. I know you probably want to focus on the team being picked to win the WAC, but I'm going to just talk about you for a minute, okay? When you heard the news that you were picked as a preseason player of the year, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, I was honored. I thought it was, I really appreciated it. It was, it was cool just to see when, people recognize, how hard you work and, what you've been able to try to accomplish in the years before. But as you mentioned, man, it's, the big thing is, it doesn't matter to me if I actually, we get the award or not, as long as we, win the WAC and accomplish those team goals. I think those are the more important things. Looking at the season and looking at my career here at GCU, winning the WAC and going out on top with those guys, that I've been playing, so many years with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the more important thing to me when it comes down to it. But it was an honor. It is awesome that people recognize me for that. But once again, I can't wait to compete with these guys and see how far we can take this team.
You met Dan Marley when you were a Suns fan as a kid, and you
right.
were at Marley's, and he was signing the pictures and all that stuff. Take me back to then when you followed him as a youngster and what you thought of him as a player, then coach.
Well, I remember, I know my parents were fans, and they loved, we would go to Marley's restaurant every once in a while after Suns game. I just know that they were Suns fans, and none of them were from here, but when they moved out here, they kind of adopted the team. And so, I'd be along for the ride. And I remember meeting him. At the time, I was young enough to where, I don't really quite know what's going on. But yeah. I do remember Marley. And so that says something right there. And so, he's always, if you look at his career, he's just about done it all as well. And it's awesome to be able to play for a coach that's been there, done it. He really knows the game. He knows, offense, X's and O's inside out, and which makes it a lot of fun to play for. And he coaches the way that he plays it, get up and down, mm-hmm. Shoot it when you're open. If you think you make it, put it up. And, it's a style of play that's a lot of fun to play. And, it's been a joy to do just for the last 4 years.
GCU is home this weekend to Florida A&M and then Robert Morris. These are two home games that you can go check out the Lopes and check out Josh. You're going to play, right?
Yeah, no, I'm cleared and good to play.
All right. So back on Dan, you came across him when he was coaching. You didn't see him play. He'd already been out of the league. And
right.
Does he blow out those tapes, those YouTube? Did you have to go YouTube him to see what he was like as a player?
I think I've seen enough growing up, I'd seen enough growing up just to know kind of how he played. I think he'd shoot it, extremely well, and he would streak in and go throw down a few dunks. And I remember watching highlights growing up just from, just watching TV with my parents enough to get an idea how he played and how hard he played. So that was pretty much that.
When did you start beating him in three-point shootouts, if ever?
See, that's the thing. That's the thing. Yeah. He beat me when I first showed up here, and I don't think we've played since, but he still has the upper hand.
Get out of here. You've only played against Dan once in a three-point shootout, Josh? Serious?
A couple of times. When I was, I think, my freshman and redshirt freshman year. So
yeah.
Maybe we're due for a rematch.
No. I mean, and, his half-court stuff. Like, I remember being at Suns games doing broadcasting on Press Row, and Dan would just come over, take the ball, turn around, hook shot it up from the timeline. And it would go in every time, or half court. I mean, that was his thing. And he thought he was all that. So it's kind of fun to hear a player that would take him down. I think it would be worth seeing you take him down. It just sounds like it before you get out of there.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have a few more contests, and I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, just walk up to him and say, Sesmat got on my case today about having a shootout. How's school going? How is that working out for you academically at GCU?
School's going great. I redshirted my first year. As you kind of mentioned, so it just gave me a lot of time to, finish a lot of classes. I graduated with a business management degree, and a minor in sports management in 3 years. So I got that degree done pretty quick. And so these last 2 years, I've been able to just work on my MBA. So I'm just about done with that. I'll finish that up right at the end of the season. Was able to get a lot of schooling done. It's been a good opportunity to just be here at Grand Canyon University. The classes have been great. I've really learned a ton. I'm not sure quite what I want to do with my degrees yet.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens after my basketball career is up and over. But But school's been great. I think I'm getting to the point though where I'm excited to be done and finished and have my degree. But it's been good. It's been a fun opportunity, and I've really enjoyed the classes.
Be an agent someday. Do this. I mean, talking to you, you could sit behind a microphone. That's pretty easy. You know, be a sports,
I appreciate it.
Sports front office guy, GM, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think all those things are super intriguing. I really am not sure. We'll see what opportunities pop up. I'd like to try a few different things, not limit myself, see what I enjoy, and then stick to it once I kind of figure it out. I think, you know, you always hear people talk about do something that you love, and right. I think it, you know, sometimes it takes a few different jobs and a few different experiences to kind of figure that out. But I mean, sometimes people, you know, fall into it their first go around. So I don't know. We'll see. Once again, like I said, I'd like to try to play as long as possible, and then, you know, who knows what I'll end up doing when that's all said and done.
Casey Benson versus Dwayne Russell. I'm not asking you to compare them strengths, weaknesses. I'm just asking you how different a style will it be. Will it be exactly the same as what it was last year for you?
Well, I'm thankful. Dwayne was an incredible player. Dwayne, yep. He's doing real well over in France as well. But I love Dwayne. I've known Dwayne since Peoria days. It's funny because I've known both of them for a long time. I've known Dwayne since we were... I, you know, played against Dwayne in club ball growing up in grade school. And then actually played with Casey growing up in grade school. So I've known both of them for a long time. But Dwayne was extremely fun to play with. He was just shifty, quick. There wasn't a quicker guy that I've played with or against. Man, he's extremely impressive. And last year especially, he really worked on a shot and really could shoot it, which was super cool to see. I mean, that really opened up the floor for him. You know, and he always knew where you were on the court, would always find you. But he could also score it really well. And so he was a lot of fun to play with. And Casey's a lot in the same way. I think he can shoot it super well. One thing that Casey does that's really fun to play with is as soon as he gets the ball, he's looking up the floor. Okay. So if he catches the ball and you're running, he'll look up and he'll find you. And it's kind of fun. So we'll play real quick with Casey as well. And he can really shoot it too and really knows how to find guys and make the right plays. And they're both super smart players. So we're lucky to have both of them. You know, wasn't sure exactly what to do once Dwayne left. And I was thankful to be reunited with Casey this year. And so far it's fun to practice and play with him. And I can't wait to get out on the court with them on Friday.
You remember the Suns backcourt 2000? You remember that? You weren't even around then. You couldn't have remembered that. That's a bad question.
No, I don't. You'll have to.
But no, backcourt 2000 was Penny Hardaway.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, back then. And so you could call this backcourt 2017 or something like that. I don't know. No slight towards Dwayne. No. But you and Casey together will be a lot of fun. Look, appreciate the visit. Best of luck on Friday and again next week too. Florida A&M and Robert Morris. Look forward to seeing you on the court. Take care.
Yeah, hey, thank you again for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. There's Josh Braun. That is Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk GCU. And this week the basketball program at home on Friday night against Florida A&M and the next week against Robert Morris. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sesmat. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.